Welcome to another edition of Transfer Tittle Tattle here on Radio Yorkshire, and it's an extended special tonight from 7 till 9. It's the end of a transfer saga with the selling of Raheem Sterling. I've spoken to Rob Pollard, Manchester City correspondent for a whole host of establishments, to get his take on the deal. Stefan Bierkowski, Bleacher Report's Bundesliga correspondent, will take me through the Schweinsteiger signing and, of course, other happenings in the German leagues. And before 8, I'll be speaking to Nicholas Rigg, ESPN FC's correspondent for Real Madrid, to talk about some of the big Galactico signings. We'll have a full roundup of the Yorkshire transfers after 8, and of course, Liam Williams from the Mirror Online joins me in the studio.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
So Liam, last week we were saying that there was virtually nothing transfer-wise. This week, we've been bestowed with the greatest saga ending. We've had a couple of big-name players moving, even in our own region as well. So, I mean, thanks for joining me, Liam. I don't think we'll wrap this one up in 10 minutes, like I said last week.
No, it's good to be back. Might be a long one tonight.
Let's start off with, obviously, the biggest news. Raheem Sterling moving for £49 million. We'll only just touch on this one because we've also got Rob Pollard, Manchester City correspondent for Bleacher's Report, coming up very shortly. But what were your initial thoughts when you saw this one come through? I mean, we've got to be happy this is finally over.
Yeah, I thought it's always been a matter of time. You know, Liverpool, I think, have handled it quite well, to be honest. They've said all along he's not for sale, and they've stuck by it as best they can. But ultimately, every player has a fee, and Man City have finally met that, and at long last, it's over.
I mean, what did you make to his original? Have you seen his first interview? I mean, the presenter said she was very nice. He was going out signing, autographs for fans. It all seemed very cheery over at Manchester City.
Yeah, and what struck me is how young he seemed. You know, you see these footballers playing at the top level, and sometimes you forget that they are essentially as old as university students. And you know, you'll know from your time at uni, you cannot imagine those people in this sort of situation. Mm. You're having hundreds of thousands of pounds a week or a month talked that you're going to be getting in your wage, and talking about tens of millions of pounds as in transfer fees. And it finally sort of hit home that, you know, he's just a young lad. People are calling him a money grabber and all the rest of it, but ultimately he's just a young lad who'll want to play football, he wants to earn a lot of money, and he wants to be successful, and I don't think you can really blame him for that.
I mean, he's never really claimed to be a Liverpool fan, really, has he? I mean, he came through QPR, he was signed by Rafa. You know, this isn't another Steven Gerrard, is it?
No, what I think's interesting is he left QPR to go to Liverpool. He wasn't a money grabber then. No one knew who he was. He was just somebody who wanted to play for a bigger club and had a better chance at success. All of a sudden, he leaves Liverpool to go to Man City, another club where he's got a bigger chance of success, and all of a sudden, he's a money grabber. Mm. Ultimately, that's just the way the food chain works in football. A young player moves to a better club to improve themselves and improve their chance of success. I don't see a great deal wrong with that, to be honest.
No, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think that money must have played at least some part in it. I can't disregard that he played no part in it whatsoever, because he was always going to get a much bigger wage at Manchester City than he was going to do at Liverpool.
He was, but I don't think that was the deciding factor for him. You know, I mean, if a player moves from Southampton to Liverpool, is that about money, or is it the fact that they're playing for a bigger club? Mm. You know, and I'm afraid for Liverpool fans, it's the same now. You know, you can try your best to keep hold of these players, but ultimately they want to play in the Champions League, and they will earn more money at Man City, and I don't think you can hold that against them. Mm. But I do believe that if the two clubs would have offered the same money, he would rather have moved to Man City, and I think that's ultimately what it comes down to.
Yeah, and what would have topped the bill if it wasn't for Raheem Sterling? The signing that's going to make a lot of Manchester United fans' parents cry, it's Bastian Schweinsteiger. He's going to cost an arm and a leg to put on the back of someone's shirt.
Well, the good news on that front, actually, is that Manchester United now charge per name rather than per
letter.
Oh,
really?
So, yeah, it's actually the same if you have Demba Ba or you have Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Because I remember getting a Bradford Bulls shirt, and I wanted to get Shontaine Harpy, which wasn't too bad. But no, it was Vinicolo wanted. I ended up getting Shontaine Harpy because it was just cheaper, because it was by letter. Yeah. But yeah, we were talking about this for a couple of weeks now, and he's finally there, and it's going to be good to see him in the English leagues.
Yeah, it's something he said he wanted to do. You know, it was one of his career ambitions to play in the Premier League. I think if he'd have spent his whole career at Bayern Munich, he would have retired happy. He wouldn't have had big regrets that he never got to play in the Premier League because he's played for Bayern Munich his whole career. But he's sort of been forced out the door a little bit. He's not played that much last season. And I think if you are going to move to the Premier League, which is something you've wanted to tick off your bucket list for a while, Manchester United would have been his preferred destination. So it's a winner all around, really.
What role do you think Louis van Gaal's made in this? Because obviously he was there when he was at Bayern Munich. I think he must have played some role in getting him to the club.
Yeah, definitely. It was Louis van Gaal who brought Schweinsteiger through at Bayern Munich. He turned him from a struggling winger into one of the best central midfielders in the world for the best part of a decade. He's had that impact on certain players. He's had a very negative impact on others, as I'm sure we'll mention later. But Bastian Schweinsteiger is somebody whose career really took off in part due to Van Gaal, so I think he'd love to be working with him again.
Now, Schneiderlin, a couple of weeks ago you said he would be signed by the next time we talked. Obviously, a few things came up, but they ended up getting them both. They ended up getting Schneiderlin and Schweinsteiger. You know, is this is he the replacement for Carrick now?
Well, it's nice that it would have been nicer if they could have spaced these out over a few weeks, but we'll make do. I don't think he's a replacement for Carrick, because I think he's a slightly different type of player. Michael Carrick's a sort of put himself in the right position and pick passes off and then can play the ball forward, whereas Schneiderlin's someone who I think's more active in breaking play up. He'll go and close players down. I think it's handy for Manchester United to have options now in midfield. They've got several different types of midfielders. They've got Herrera who can go forward with the ball, Carrick who could sit deeper, Schweinsteiger who could do, you know, both roles, and Schneiderlin who again can act as a very solid defensive midfielder. I think it was a little bit of a surprise that it took so long to get them both through. I think they wanted to get Schweinsteiger in first, but ultimately I think the fans can be very happy that they've ended up with both.
Yeah, no doubt about that. They've got some couple of world-class players there. We've been talking about the spine of Manchester United quite a lot. They've now got quite a lot of the transfer business done. Do you see that spine of the team now coming together?
Yes, and I think over the next week or so you'll probably see a bit more movement on that. Sergio Ramos has been made the club captain at Real Madrid. I think that will see the end of any rumour that he's going to Manchester United, and I think that they'll then move on to the next target, which is Nicolas Otamendi, Argentinian centre-back, who you would expect to be, if he did sign, the first-choice centre-back at Old Trafford. Another key area as well up front, they are looking for a striker. They've lost Van Persie, they've lost Falcao, they need to replace them. Lewandowski is one name that's been mentioned. I think a more realistic target is Cavani from Paris, who has said in the past that he's not particularly keen playing out wide, and which is why he's not scored as many goals. He'd rather play up front. And I think that'd suit both Cavani and Manchester United. He wouldn't mind the chance to go back up front, and obviously United do need another centre-forward.
That's got to involve Di Maria in the deal, surely.
I think it could, you know. If you watched Louis van Gaal's press conference last night, he mentioned Di Maria quite briefly and sort of skirted around the issue, saying that it's complicated and it's a process. But it wasn't a very reassuring sign that he's going to be here for the long term. I think if United are that desperate for a centre-forward, if they're that desperate for Cavani, Di Maria could end up moving in the other direction.
And it would. Do you think people would say that Manchester United had made a loss on that kind of a deal?
I think they might, to be honest, because he came for £59.7 million, British record transfer fee. I think they probably would lose a little bit of money on that. And I think there's a lot of United fans who'd be keen to give him another season. They think he's a world-class footballer. Last season was just an off-season. He had the break-in at his family house, which unsettled him. And a lot aren't particularly fond of Cavani. They see his performances against the likes of Barcelona and Chelsea in the Champions League when he's had quiet games for a number of reasons, and they judge him on that, which I think's a bit harsh, to be honest. But I personally think that if Cavani did come, he would be a successful player for Manchester United.
We touched on Otamendi. Reports that he's threatening to go on strike unless this move is put through to Manchester United. Is that really the kind of player that Louis van Gaal will be wanting?
It's a strange one, really, because he doesn't seem to tolerate fools gladly at all.
No.
If he thinks that a player's sort of moody or, you know, he's something not quite right in his personality that he doesn't take to, he'll happily show them the door. I think that if that is true about him being prepared to go on strike, it's just a case of him wanting to force through a move to a bigger club. I don't think it's the best way to go about it. But ultimately, player power is you know, well, it's more powerful than it's ever been.
No, you're right.
And sometimes that's what you need to force these sort of things through.
I mean, he doesn't have any tolerance for reputations or anything like that. And that's an interesting one going on to the next one, which is Victor Valdez. This morning, obviously, I'll take you through the entire story. Victor Valdez was accused by the Manchester United manager of not playing in reserve fixtures last season. He wasn't happy with his attitude, which, you know, you can understand from the Manchester United manager. We've seen him before. We've talked about this. But he's actually tweeted this morning, as Victor Valdez, with four pictures and a picture of him showing him with the reserve team, saying with four dots, a question mark, hashtag respect. Now, that's got to mean that this isn't going to work out very well. Because, I mean, he only played, what, one game last season?
Yeah, it's a really, really strange one, isn't it? But they do have previous for this. Valdez, I believe, refused to play in a Barcelona B game when he was back there, playing under Louis van Gaal, actually. So you're going back best part of a decade. Yeah. And he publicly apologised for that. So he does have previous for this. I think it's very strange what's gone on. Because he tweeted a couple of days ago that he'd not gone on the tour, but he tweeted that he was, you know, ready to start the season for United and all the rest of it. And then Van Gaal comes out and says that he's not fit the philosophy and that he's not played in reserve games. So he's sort of thrown him under the bus a little bit, which I think it's a strange way of doing things. But if he wants to make a statement that no player can step out of line, then it's a decent way of doing it. Mm-hmm. But then Valdez has sort of hit back himself. It's becoming a little saga between the two of them, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it really is. And this all happening when the De Gea deal's up in the air. For me, though, it's looking more like that De Gea will stay. I mean, he's gone on the pre-season tour. Real Madrid are reportedly in for Kiko Casillas from Espanyol, which would fill up the gap, so to speak. This could mean that David De Gea will at least stay in the short term, because they're not going to get rid of two keepers in a month. I mean, that'd be ridiculous.
I think they could, to be honest.
And the top two keepers?
I expect them to, actually, because De Gea's one who's been set to go for a while. I've mentioned before that he said goodbye to his teammates and then ended up coming back.
Yeah.
Valdez is another one who you can't see a way back for now. That would be both of them. You know, it's fairly innocent story, really. You know, De Gea's a long-term target and Valdez has fallen out with the manager. It's not, you know, anything too extraordinary, and I think United have been looking for another goalkeeper anyway. They've been prepared for De Gea to go. They've been prepared to bring a new keeper in, so it doesn't change a great deal, actually.
But in terms of transfers, you know, if you're trying to put a transfer deal through and you're going, well, we don't actually need this player, there's a lot of teams now that are going to be putting a gun to Manchester United's head going, you could start this season without a goalkeeper, you'd better pay us a record transfer fee or something like that to get a pretty mediocre keeper in the long term. I mean, he's going to make, Ed Woodward has done some good things in the past, but he'd have to be a magician to try and pull a good deal off here.
Well, I think he's actually handled this really well, because he's not given in to Real Madrid, and by all accounts, De Gea has trained really well with United since he's been back, so it's not like he's throwing a strop over anything. I think there is a chance that he could start the season at United. I think he could end up playing the season, seeing his contract out and going on a free. I do think it'll come to it that he will end up being sold. I think Real Madrid realise he's one of the best keepers in the world and is a long-term replacement for Casillas. But there are a number of goalkeeping targets out there for Manchester United to not worry too much about being extorted over fees. You know, if there's only one or two keepers, you think fair enough, but there are that many. You know, teams can't really afford to hold them to ransom.
I know, but teams that have big money are usually held to ransom anyway. Manchester United usually end up having to put some on the transfer fee, just like Man City, just like Chelsea, because they know they've got the money in the bank. You know, they can't claim that this is all that they literally have. So that, you know, there is going to be a struggle. I mean, who would you see as a target now for Manchester United? If Valdez goes and De Gea goes, who do you think? Just because, I mean, obviously there's nothing set in stone yet, but who would you think that would be the first target for them?
Well, I think one of the latest names to be thrown in the air is Sergio Romero, who plays for Argentina. There's talk of him going to Italy, so that's not, you know, set in stone by any means. There's also Hugo Lloris at Tottenham, who I think will be a surprising one because of Tottenham's history with Manchester United and Daniel Levy dealing with the club.
Yeah.
So, like I said, there are a few names out there. It's very early days to be saying. Because, again, like I said, De Gea could start the season. But they'll certainly be keeping their options open and looking at other options.
And unfortunately for all you Leeds fans there, it has been very much Manchester United themed so far. But the last one is Robin van Persie. This, for me, is a signing for, we always say, especially on the bigger picture, that Turkey is the graveyard for Premier League footballers that are just past it. Robin van Persie, for me, he has lost that yard now. He's not the player he was. He did win the title for Manchester United on the fee he got. I don't think it really matters what fee he goes for Fenerbahce, because quite frankly, I think they'd be happy just to get him off of the wage bill, because he was on a massive wage at Manchester United.
Yeah, I think the main thing was getting him off the books. When you're on £1 million a month, it's £12 million a year. It adds up, you know. It's a large fee, and it's not just that you're paying out £1 million a month, it's that you're not paying it to somebody else who could be scoring goals. Unfortunately for Van Persie, they dried up at the end. You know, I do think he's still got the ability, certainly got the touch, but it just wasn't quite happening. Like you mentioned, once that yard of pace goes, sometimes you think you're probably over the hill. He'll probably go to Turkey and you know, forge out a decent few years for himself. But I think the main thing, like you've mentioned, is definitely getting that £250,000 a week off the books.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's not good to be all Manchester United themed. After the break, we're going to be talking to Rob Pollard, Manchester City correspondent for Bleachers Report, and he's on the Blue Moon podcast, and we'll be speaking to him about that Raheem Sterling signing.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
So it's Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, and in the studio joining me, as always, Liam Williams from the Mirror Online. And joining me on the line as well is Rob Pollard, Manchester City correspondent for Bleachers Report, New Statesman, Mirror Football, Manchester Evening News, Goal, Typical City, and of course the Blue Moon Podcast. Rob, thanks for taking some time out to speak to us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's start off, Rob, on Raheem Sterling. What, are you as happy as we are that the saga's finally over?
Yeah, I mean, it had become one of the most boring transfer sagas in recent times, hadn't it, really? I think the inevitability that he was going to end up at City just made it very, very boring indeed. And it was kind of dragged out a little bit longer than perhaps it should have been. But I think most City fans are pleased because... on the back of last season, I mean, City regressed last season. I don't think there's any way you can get away from that in pretty much every competition and in pretty much every aspect of the side. City were not as good as they were the year before. So I think there's a recognition amongst the fan base and indeed the directors of the club that this sort of big changes need to happen this year. And it's sort of been struggling, really, to sort of get one of these deals over the line. I mean, it's only been 2 weeks, but City fans were becoming a little bit anxious, I think, that the club hadn't made a big name signing. So it was a relief as much as anything, I think, for the fans to get that one over the line.
And what did you make of that massive transfer fee?
Well, I think people are incredibly myopic where transfer fees are concerned. I think that every single transfer is different. I think comparing transfer fees from one player to another is slightly misguided. Mm. I think you've got to take the issues into consideration with this deal. He's homegrown, which instantly pushes the price up. That's just a fact. Liverpool didn't want to lose him. It wasn't a situation whereby the club were unhappy or needed to move him on or any of those things. The club wanted to keep him. And City want, you know, young, hungry players. He's potentially world-class as well. I think that's the other thing that's gone a little bit unnoticed. Then there's been a slight rewriting of history from the Liverpool fans. As soon as it became clear he was going to leave, they decided that he wasn't actually that good. But if you look at over the last 2 years, I mean, is there another 20-year-old in Europe who's shown as much promise as Raheem Sterling? I'm not sure there is. So I think that there's a number of factors combined that made the price what it was. And at the end of the day, it's not my money. And, you know, I care less about transfer fees, I think, than the majority of football fans.
And what have you made of this culture change now that we've seen of Liverpool players going to Manchester City? That's got to make you happy rather than the reverse of what we've seen for most of football history.
Yeah, it does. And it's very interesting as well. I mean, the Liverpool fans are struggling to come to terms with it as well, I think. I think they're a unique club in the sense that they had such unprecedented success in the 70s and 80s that coming to terms with this, situation. I mean, I think they've won one trophy in 9 years or something like that. So they're no longer the force that they were. And I think that Manchester City represent a far better chance of silverware for players. Which has been another thing, hasn't it, that sort of upset me a little bit, is that this idea that Raheem Sterling is some kind of money grabber and he's just moved for the money. I mean, Liverpool offered him £100,000 a week. I mean, that's plenty of money. You know, he's moved because I think he feels that he's got a better chance of winning silverware at City, and I think most people would agree with that.
Hi, Rob Liam here.
Hi, mate. You all right?
Yeah, good. Thanks, you.
Yeah, very well.
Good, good. I just wanted to ask you about Fabian Delph, because that one seemed all set to go ahead, and then there was a very dramatic U-turn. What did you think of the whole thing?
I mean, from City's perspective, I think that would have been a good move, because, I mean, at £8 million for a player who, all right, he's not a world beater, but at 25, he's made really, really good progress in the last 18 months, and he actually looks a very good player now. And this idea that he wouldn't have been given games at City, I think, was nonsense. Because if you look at the amount of games Fernando played last year, and he wasn't particularly impressive in many of them, I think he would have been given a go. And it would have been down to how well he adapted and how well he took his chance. But it does seem that he's kind of got cold feet. And perhaps somebody, maybe an ex-pro or somebody at Villa, has kind of got into his ear at the right moment and kind of said to him, you know, I mean, we see the scare tactics all the time. Constantly, Scott Sinclair and Jack Rodwell are used as examples of English players who kind of go to City and fail. No one ever really mentions the fact that Les Scott, Barry, Adam Johnson, Micah Richards, all these players were key parts of title-winning and FA Cup-winning City sides and enhanced their careers immensely whilst wearing a blue shirt. So perhaps he got a little bit scared and felt he couldn't establish himself in the side. And I do understand that. You've got to remember, with the Euros coming round in 2016, he's got to think about his England place. And, he's not a kind of hugely established England player, is he? He's kind of got himself in the reckoning in recent times. And he probably feared going to City and perhaps not playing as much and that threatening his England chances. And in a way, I can understand that, but I do feel he would have got perhaps more chances than I think he probably thinks he would have.
And looking forward, where do you think that Manchester City will strengthen now for the remainder of the transfer window?
I think they do need a lot, to be honest. I think a midfield is vital, perhaps two. Because I think Delph coming in, I don't think that if he had have signed, I don't think that would have been the end. I think they need a bit more dynamism and energy. I think the transfer policy is pretty clear. They're signing younger players than they have done in the last two windows because the average age of the squad is perhaps a little bit too high. I think the core of the side is sort of 29, 30 on average. And I think there's a recognition now that that needs to come down. I mean, I would still, if I was making the decisions at City, I would be looking for a left back because I don't think that's been particularly secure in recent times. And as well, there's going to be a situation that will probably occur where they're going to need a striker because it does look like Jovetic and Dzeko are available. And if they are to go elsewhere, which I think is perfectly possible, particularly in Edin Dzeko's case, I think he's, you know, he's rarely injured and he's got a very, very impressive goal scoring record. It just, you know, it's just time for him to move on. So I think he'll certainly find a club. And Jovetic has got a good reputation in Serie A. And if those two both leave, then City need a striker as well. So I think there's definitely a few more will be coming into City and a few sort of squad players as well, perhaps homegrown squad players. So I think you'll see that there's quite a lot of movement. I mean, what's been interesting about this window is that City haven't got their sort of transfer business done as quickly as they usually do. And I think that that's a byproduct of the fact that they're now looking at the top players again. I think the last two windows where they've been really swift and really efficient is perhaps one, because they've been very organised and well planned, but two, because the players they've been going for, they've had pretty much a free run at. Whereas I think that this time, with FFP sanctions lifted and the revenue of the club so high now, they're back in the mix for sort of bigger name players, and I think that they tend to be the more complicated deals to complete.
Well, Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining me.
No problem. Thank you.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 7 till 9 tonight. And I've been joined by Stefan Bienkowski, the online journalist for FTV Sport. Also talks about the Bundesliga for the New York Times and Bleacher Report. Stefan, thanks for joining me.
It's a more than pleasure. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Hope you're doing well as well.
Yep, fantastic.
Well, let's talk about the biggest news that has come over from the last week from the Bundesliga. It has to be Schweinsteiger. Were you shocked about this news? Because I expected him to go on and be a Bayern legend and really retire at the club.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people probably did, you know, in Germany and, of course, just across the whole sport in general. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, over the last two, three seasons, Schweinsteiger has had genuine problems with his fitness and specific injuries. So despite the fact that he still very much loved at Bayern, and I mean, when he left, they did say there will always be a place for him once he's finished playing his career. You know, the coaching staff and Guardiola really just couldn't justify involving him in the first team plans. I mean, that's not to say Schweinsteiger's finished or, you know, he should be put out to pasture or anything like that, but the simple math. Simple fact of the matter is that Bayern have about 7 or 8 central midfielders, and you know, they spent a lot of money on younger players who are just biding their time in a moment to come through. And I think when Manchester United said they were interested, it just seemed to suit all parties.
And do you think that the Manchester United manager had a role to play in bringing him over, obviously that relationship from him being at Bayern?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, I think when Schweinsteiger says there's very few clubs, or indeed no other club, that he would have joined aside from Manchester United, I think he's been very genuine. Louis van Gaal has quite a strong history with Schweinsteiger. I mean, it's not to say they're best friends or they're old friends, and, you know, they go off and meet for dinner or go on holidays during the off-season, but Louis van Gaal did have a large part to play in him becoming a central midfielder. He started off his career as a fullback and then as a winger. And until Louis van Gaal turned him into the central midfielder that he is, he was really just a bit part player at Bayern Munich. So, yeah, Schweinsteiger, I think, was quite comfortable in the knowledge that, you know, he's going to a club like Manchester United that, you know, has that similar sort of size and feel about it to Bayern Munich, but also has a manager who he's worked with before and he can rely on.
And what have you made of this that I've been reading in the papers about Ryan Giggs and Schweinsteiger having a sort of a bit of a relationship?
Oh, that's actually quite news to me, if I'm honest with you. But, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, one of the interesting things that I think that has come out of this transfer is that, you know, I think a lot of people in Germany would probably say that Schweinsteiger is not the kind of player who's going to come over to Manchester United and play 30, 40 games a season for them. He's probably almost certainly going to be a bit part player as he continues to work with his injuries. So, but I think perhaps just as importantly as the stuff he does on the pitch is what he brings off the pitch. He is the captain of Germany. He's been the vice captain for a long time, and that's similar at Bayern Munich. And what I think as well is genuine talent on the pitch. I think Van Gaal did want to bring in a player who could really, you know, galvanise the team and really just bring leaders into the squad. I mean, it seems so simple and so vague as well in this kind of sport, the way the sport is these days, but at the end of the day, having these, you know, these experienced heads on in the team can make a huge difference, especially if Van Gaal is going to push for the title this season.
Yeah, definitely. And what do you think the next step now is for Bayern? Like you say, they've got quite a few central midfielders, but do you think they'll strengthen with someone like Vidal now?
Yeah, I mean, Vidal's an interesting one because, as I obviously just said to you there, and you alluded yourself, like, they do have a huge amount of central midfielders, but I guess to an extent Vidal maybe makes sense. I think what Bayern Munich really had to do this summer is find players who can change games, who can win games for them. They do have one of the biggest and extensive squads in European football. I don't think that's ever been in doubt, but I think what really bothers Bayern Munich fans is that over the last two seasons under Guardiola, they have looked fantastic until they've came up in the really big crunch games. And it's almost like they've got that 90-95% there, but then when they come up against the likes of Barcelona or Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, it's that just that tiny final step that they can't seem to do. So instead of buying half a dozen average decent players, I think they are going for the very few fantastic players, and that's obviously why they've picked up Douglas Costa from Shakhtar to help cover their Robin and Frank Ribéry on the wing. And I guess that's why they've got Vidal as well, because despite the fact that they have all the essential midfielders, they wanted someone who could genuinely offer a Champions League winning performance.
And looking elsewhere in the Bayern Munich team, where else do you think that they could possibly strengthen over the summer? Because there's been some talk as well, even about Di Maria joining the club.
Yeah, I mean, I think before the summer, I think most people would have wondered what if or when Bayern were going to sign another winger. One of the problems last season was that they had Arjen Robben for much of the season almost carrying the team through his fantastic performances. And then, obviously, when he got injured, there was no one there to replace them. Much of the frustration for Bayern Munich fans as well this last season was the manner in which Mario Götze has continued to just fall and diminish season upon season under Guardiola. So they really wanted a winger. Now that they've signed Douglas Costa, I'm not entirely sure if Di Maria is as much an option as he was before. But there are other spots in this team. They still haven't signed an central defender, which I find quite interesting, because that was a spot of worry as injuries piled up last season. And they haven't found another right-back yet, which is quite surprising, despite the fact that the only player they have playing right-back at the moment is Rafinha, assuming Pep Guardiola wants to continue playing Philip Lahm in the centre of the park. So despite the fact that they are signing big, important players, there are still a few holes in this side, which be interesting to see if Guardiola rolls up his sleeves and fills those spots as well before the start of the new season.
And looking elsewhere, if we look at Borussia Dortmund, there's been a few rumours sort of bumbling by that we might see Marco Reus playing in the Premier League this summer. Do you think there's really anything in that?
No, I'd be very, very surprised if Marco Reus made a move this summer. He did sign a new contract earlier in the year, which I think surprised near enough everybody. But I think if you're being a bit more sceptical, you could argue that he signed the contract so the club can get a fuller fee for him. But I'd be very, very surprised if he was to move this summer. Dortmund have brought in a new manager, Thomas Tuchel. You know, the club, when it comes down to selling players, they have been very frank and very honest with the fans. So I think if there was any deal with any club in the Premier League or further afield, Marco Reus probably would have moved on this summer. But that's not to say that a deal in the future won't be possible, but I think just the way that the team has been set up and the way they've been training and working towards things in the pre-season, I think the club are very much expecting to hold on to all their stars this summer.
Well, Stefan, thank you very much for joining me. We'll be talking more transfers right after this.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 7 till 9 tonight. We're going to have a look at a bit of Spanish football now. Madrid-based sports journalist, work for English AC, Darius, and ESPN FC, Nicholas Rigg, joins me. Nick, thanks for joining me.
No worries, a pleasure as always, Danny. Thanks for having me.
Now, let's start off on what's probably the biggest news in Madrid, which has to be Iker Casillas leaving. What was the feeling around Madrid on that? Because he has been an absolute club legend, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's something that we've been following a lot. It's been such a messy process, really dating back for 2 years since Mourinho was here, and he dropped him, of course, for the first time in a decade. And since then, it's really been a downward spiral for Iker Casillas. Not any of his own fault, really. Some of it has been put in there that he's been kind of demanding a bit more money and he wouldn't leave unless it was on his terms. But the general feeling, really, at the weekend was one of sadness at the way the club has treated him, really, and just that this club legend that's won everything and that's the kind of Galactico to top all Galacticos has left. He was in the press room on Sunday. He was in tears there. He was alone. There were tears from a lot of the Madrid fans as well. And then a kind of strange press conference the day after, where the president, Florentino Perez, kind of seemingly felt a bit bad that he left Casillas to do it all on his own and came out and give him a bit of a better send-off. But it's all been a bit of a messy situation, really, for the club, for Florentino Perez, for the fans who've been kind of divided over it all. And for Casillas as well. So it's good that it's finally come to a head and he's got a new club to go to next year in Porto.
Yeah, you're right there. And what I would have thought is that David De Gea would probably move in now, but that's throwing the cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, it seemed that way for the last year or so. It seemed like a bit of a no-brainer that he was going to arrive, but the kind of rumours now are that Man United are really sticking to their guns with wanting the money that they've asked. Obviously, Ed Woodward there is a very hard guy to deal with. Good for United, but not so good for other clubs. And they're really digging their heels into to keep him for one last year and risk losing him for nothing next summer. And it seems, from looking at some of the reports this morning, it seems that Madrid may be looking for an alternative. There's Kiko Casilla, who is kind of, don't get mistaken for Iker Casillas, from Espanyol, who could be coming in for around $6 million, it seems like now. So they'll have him and Keylor Navas, and it seems like with those two guys, they're both good keepers. They're not of the level of De Gea, but it seems like they could possibly go for a year with these two guys and get De Gea in on a free next year.
Yeah, very interesting, especially when he's put into the Victor Valdez scenario, especially with the fact that he might be leaving. It looks even more certain because of the fact that I couldn't understand it myself if Manchester United were to get rid of both of their top-class keepers in the same month.
Yeah, that's been a bit of a weird one with Valdez, because as soon as he moved there, some people were saying he was there just a big club, use their training facilities, get his fitness back and find another club. Others said that obviously with De Gea looking likely to move on, that he was a ready-made replacement for De Gea there, an experienced guy who's obviously gone from Barcelona and a top keeper to step in as soon as De Gea left. But obviously he's had a bit of a falling out with Louis van Gaal. He's had a bit of a Twitter spat as well this morning with him demanding a bit more respect. So it seems like he's on his way. And Valencia over here have been linked with him. And on the back of that, I mean, there's been such a huge reporting of De Gea over here for months that they've been, it's kind of spilled out into reporting on who replacement Man United. And Jan Oblak, who's an Atletico Madrid guy who's been linked with Man United as De Gea's replacement, and I personally think he's as good a keeper as De Gea, if not better. He's just not got the kind of umph surrounding him at United. And there's been a few guys, the guy at Bayer Leverkusen as well, he's been linked with United. So he seems like a bit of a goalkeeper merry-go-round this year, and I think as soon as one moves on, then the rest might follow.
Yeah, that really wouldn't surprise me. And one other target for Manchester United has been Ramos. With him being given the captaincy, I'd be shocked to see him actually moving now. Is this one last stitch attempt to try and get him back to try and get him over to Manchester United?
Yeah, again, it's been such a, I mean, it's always an entertaining summer at Madrid with the ins and outs of their club. The Ramos one in particular, given how highly held he is with the fans from last summer from getting the famous injury time equaliser in the Champions League final, took him up another level to kind of the main man at Madrid alongside Ronaldo and alongside Casillas as well. And the talk was that he's been using United, his agent, who is also his brother, has been using United as a bit of bait to get a better contract here at Madrid, and it certainly seems to it certainly feels like that at the moment. He's currently out in Australia with the rest of the squad. A lot of images that are coming from the club, but a lot of images that show Ramos to be kind of really enjoying it over there. And obviously now he's the captain. United are digging their heels in with De Gea. It seems like if De Gea moved, perhaps Ramos might go the other way. But Madrid have in the press, in both of the papers over here, Marca and Diario S, are saying that Madrid are setting the offer at $90 million, which I'm pretty sure United won't go that high. The talk today is that they might go as high as $60 million. This is in euros, but I don't think Madrid will accept for that. And it just seems a bit of a game of cat and mouse between Ramos and Florentino Perez, the president, over this new deal, which they usually renew after 2 years and with 2 years to run. Sorry, and that 2 year period is coming up now. So don't be surprised to see Ramos sign a new contract, whether that's within the next week or in the next month. But I have a feeling they'll stay in Madrid now.
Yeah, interesting stuff. One other interesting story that keeps rearing its head from time to time is Gareth Bale and a potential move back to the Premier League. Obviously, he didn't have the best of times with Real Madrid last season, but he looks like he wants to stick it out at Real Madrid now. So I don't. Is there any legs left in that story now?
No, I think that one's run out now. I think towards the back end of last season, when he was getting a lot of stick from the press and in particular from the fans, saying that not only was he not performing well, but he'd fallen out with Ronaldo, which is a kind of precursor to being shown the door. But no, that seems to have run its legs now, especially with Rafa Benitez coming in and a lot of reports saying that he's been brought in and one of the tasks is to give Gareth Bale a leading role at the club. He's been used in a variety of positions over the pre-season so far, just playing off Benzema as a false striker as well, and out on the left and behind Benzema. So it looks like Gareth Bale is going to be a really key cog for Real Madrid this year. He didn't have the best year last year, and it'll be interesting to see how much of what kind of role he gets at Madrid this year, but he's definitely going to be there next season.
And what would you expect Real Madrid to be doing in the transfer market now in terms of strengthening, especially with Barcelona's transfer embargo? Do you think they'll be looking to bring anything in now?
Yeah, it's been a weird one with the transfer embargo with Barcelona, because they've been the club who've been making all the moves in the transfer market. So it's been a bit of a odd one. And Real Madrid, the club that's usually bringing in the Galacticos, haven't been active yet. It's a weird one again with Madrid, because you usually get all these big names linked with them. They're usually three or four really big name players that are linked with them. This summer, it's just been De Gea that's been there for the last year or 18 months. And there doesn't seem to be any more big names. Marco Reus has been linked, but there's not these campaigns in the big papers in Spain that they usually have to bring big players in. But Perez is a guy who obviously likes spending money. He likes bringing in the best players, especially when a coach comes in for his first year. He's done it with Mourinho. He did it with Ancelotti 2 years ago. And I think he spent almost 200 million with Ancelotti and 100 million with Mourinho before that. So I definitely feel there's going to be something pulled out of the hat by Madrid. When, I don't know, and who, I don't know at the moment as well. Ibrahimovic has been mentioned, but as I mentioned, there have been no real big campaigns yet. I expect when there are a few big moves in the transfer market that things will open up and there'll be more reports. I'm sure we should expect a few big names in this summer at the Bernabeu.
Well, I'll be very interested. Thanks a lot for joining me again, Nick. I hope to talk to you again soon.
No worries, a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
Welcome back to Transfer Tittle Tattle with me, Danny Parkinson, here from 7 till 9 tonight. We're going to talk a little bit of Leeds United and their transfer tales so far, but let's first start on the breaking news that's been happening throughout the day, which is rather sad news, I think, for anyone involved with Leeds United. And joining me to talk about that is Leeds United commentator and senior sports correspondent for the station, Mark Wilson. Mark, thanks for coming on.
No problem, Danny.
And let's talk about Neil Redfern. He's departed with Leeds United.
Yes, it's become official, hasn't it? The news has broken that he is no more as a Leeds United employee. Did get wind of this last week, but it was being kept under wraps as to how it was all going to pan out and when it was going to be made official. But the word was that he'd been told not to come back to his job, and he's not coming back to his job. I know he's come out, Neil, and he's made criticisms of the club and the offer that he was made to come back. If he feels it wasn't a genuine offer, well, we can't comment on that or not, but the facts are that he's not coming back to work for Leeds United.
Sad news, really, isn't it? I mean, a lot of Leeds fans will always remember him as keeping them up last season.
Yeah, they will. Did we expect any other outcome, really? I've voiced my opinion on this, Danny. I think he should have gone when Steve Thompson got the sack. You know, he's saying now his position's untenable. His position was untenable when Steve Thompson got, well, suspended, to be politically correct, but never actually found guilty of doing anything. So I think Neil should have gone then. I think this outcome was inevitable from that moment, that he was going to be engineered, that he wouldn't be coming back. But he's toughed it out, you know, for his own reasons. We're not privy to those reasons why he did that. And great, obviously loves the club. You know, he might not have wanted to walk away from it. But I think this is an inevitable decision. I don't think it'll surprise anyone, Danny, to be honest. I think it was just a matter of when it would be made official rather than if.
But Leeds have lost a great academy manager now.
Yeah, they have, you know, but as Neil would be quick to say, you know, the academy and the success of it is not all down to one person.
No.
He's a figurehead of that and a very good one at that. And I've no doubt the lads that are involved in the team now, the likes of your Byrams, your Charlie Taylors, Mowat and Cook, will all thank Neil for what he's done for their careers. But the facts are that, you know, people come and people go and the football club will move on as it always has done. So he's gone. He'll be replaced, I'm sure. And, you know, things move on, mate. Time waits for no man and all that.
Now, talking about moving on, obviously, well, we're talking about the latest transfers from around the region. And at Leeds United, we've seen the signing of a second goalkeeper, I imagine. Sylvester will still be playing. But a Champions League winner, Mark, in Ross Turnbull.
Yeah, he is a Champions League winner, factually correct. How many minutes did he play to win that medal? Well, he'll say he's part of the squad, and I think he'd be first to admit that. I know when Tom spoke to him last night that, you know, he said, look, I've got the medal, but the time on the field wasn't as much as you would have hoped. But yeah, he comes, you know, high pedigree. End of the day, you don't, you know, as much as I'm not belittling what he's done, because I can't do, he's got a medal and I certainly haven't got one. But they saw him fit to have him at the club at that time. So they, you know, Chelsea at the time obviously saw something in him. He's very experienced in terms of, you know, where he's been and the players that he's been around. So I'm sure he'll add a little bit, and a little bit of backup to Silvestri as well. I think Charlie Horton came in, and I think the plan is that he'll be in under 21s this year, just learning his trade, because you know, he's only a young kid himself. So he'll learn from Turnbull as well. I think it's important to have three good quality goalkeepers. So yeah, he'll fit in. He'll put pressure on Silvestri. You know, he'll not give him an easy ride. But hopefully, you know, without injuries, I don't think we'll see too much of him.
Now, obviously, with Silvestri, he's still a young keeper. Do you imagine that Ross will probably give him a bit more experience, being able to teach him a few things?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think if there's any criticism of Silvestri, it's not about his goalkeeping ability. The criticism has always been about his decision making ability. When does he come for crosses? When does he come off his line? And I think that's only something you get through experience, and he'll get that through talking to Ross. I'm sure they go through scenarios all the time, and I'm sure Ross will be saying, look, this is how I'd do it. And Marco, he'll have to learn as he goes along. You know, he's a very good goalkeeper. I think it's easy to forget he's in his early 20s, and I'm sure with his ability, he will be a good goalkeeper and a very good one in time.
And obviously you were at the game last night against York. What did you make of the team coming together there? Because Uwe Rosa also said that they played collectively well despite not winning.
Yeah, but you know, you look at the team. Obviously, Chris Wood pulled out before kickoff, which was a worry for Uwe Rosel, but he assures us it was 100% precaution. Rather, they want him fit on the 8th of August rather than at York for a friendly. It was the same team that we saw last year, with the exception of Lee Irwin coming in. You know, and I thought Irwin did well again. He's finding his feet. I think they need to find him a settled role, because he's played two slightly different roles in the games that we've seen him. But he has got potential. I think Leeds have picked up a bit of a bargain there. I think there's certainly more to come from him. But other than that, it was the same Leeds team we saw last year. And you would argue, you know, it was the same performance we got last year. Plenty of effort and endeavour. That little bit of quality lacking, particularly in midfield, that the creativity's not there. And as Uwe acknowledges, the team is devoid of pace. And that's his big problem at the moment. He knows that. So already, I mean, what are we 3 weeks into pre-season, he's getting sick of answering questions about asking him when he's going to get some pace or some width into his team. So he's aware of that. You know, he'll be working hard to resolve that, and I'm sure he will do. But that's what it is. You know, yeah, the effort and commitment's there, never query that, but they need a little bit more if they're going to be successful.
And do you think if we're going to see it, the first signing would have to be on the left rather than Sam Byram, who's already sort of providing a little bit of that on the right?
Yeah, he is, and you know, Sam is one of the few that have got genuine pace. For me, he needs to work on his end product a little bit more. You know, he's in and out. He's in the last year of his contract. Is he going to be one that's moved on? You know, how do they look at that? And what you've got to bear in mind as well, Danny, you know, with the best intention in the world, he's a right fullback playing in an advanced right position. So he's doing a good job for the team, probably not the job if you asked him he'd prefer to do. So I think we should always bear that in mind when we're quick to criticise, he's not the finished article. No, he's not, because that's not what he's learnt his career doing. You know, he's a fullback, but Leeds are blessed with Berardi, and you know, and even Wotton's done a solid job at fullback as well. So there is that. But yeah, I would agree. Left, you know, I think a lot of people were surprised when they let Adey White go. Mm-hmm. I know he's had his injury problems, but he looked to have a little bit, well, he certainly got pace, and he looked to have a bit of trickery. The big worry was he going to stay fit? But I think he's the type of player that they need. But where they're going to get one from, I'm not too sure.
And now they're going out to Austria on Saturday as well.
Yeah, more team building. You know, obviously they've got a couple of high-profile friendlies coming up. Well, they've got three, haven't they, with Everton coming to Elland Road on the 1st of August as well. So I think Uwe's keen to test his team. I know they've had a couple of nice introduction games against Harrogate and York, but he's going to step it up now. He wants to see how they can perform under pressure, I think, which is when you learn more about your team, when they're under pressure. So you're going to do that. There's no doubt all the players have said they've worked hard, you know, in this couple of weeks. So it'd be interesting how much more. He said he's surprised how much he had to do on the fitness, Uwe Rosley. He doesn't think they're fit enough to play how he wants to play. So they're having to do the hard yards, and I'm sure that'll continue. I don't think it'll be a holiday camp under Uwe. I don't think he's that type of guy. I think you come to work, you're working. And hopefully that hard work will pay off when the season starts.
No, I can't imagine it be a fancy ski trip either. Mark, thanks very much for joining me.
No worries, mate.
Transfer Tittle Tattle on Radio Yorkshire.
That's all we've got time for here on Transfer Tittle Tattle. Just time for me to thank Liam Williams from the Mirror Online for coming on.
Being a pleasure, Danny.
I hope to speak to you again soon. Remember, our live rugby league commentary this week is Hull against Hull KR. That's tomorrow night, absolutely massive game. You looking forward to that one, Liam?
Absolutely, yes.
Can't go wrong with a Hull derby. That'll be on from 7 o'clock tomorrow night.